these aren't directly included in the long room outline, but still they're quite useful. I don't think I listed them in your outline here, but they're in the Pearl of Wisdom Book 1. Okay, so these other 8 points are first an analogy to taking refuge in the Buddha, commit ourselves wholeheartedly to a qualified spiritual master. Okay, so this is kind of, you know, if we trust the Buddha as a teacher, well, the Buddha's not around right now, you know. So what are we going to do? Well, in analogy to that, we're going to make some contacts with qualified spiritual teachers and entrust our, you know, our spiritual guidance to their care. And you can see how this fits in with taking refuge in the Buddha, because if we were alive at the time of the Buddha is going to be the one who tells us what to practice and what to abandon. Well, the Buddha isn't alive right now, you know, at least not in that particular body, in that particular manifestation. So then how are we going to get the teachings? Well, we get them through our teacher. And like Amchok Rinpoche was pointing out, even if Shakyamuni appeared here on this earth, he wouldn't say anything different than a qualified teacher would teach us. Yeah. So, you know, in doing that, then that helps to make our refuge in the Buddha quite solid. And then secondly, in analogy to taking refuge in the Dharma, okay, listen to and study the teachings as well as put them into practice in our daily life. So since the Dharma is the essence and what the whole thing is about, in analogy to taking refuge in them, how are we going to do it? How are we going to, what are we going to do having taken refuge in the Dharma? Well, we have to learn it. We learn it by studying it, by hearing it, by discussing it with other people, and then of course by putting it into practice in our lives. That's what the whole thing's about. You know. You might have a great doctor and great nurses and great medicine, but if you don't take the medicine, you don't get well. So if we don't practice the Dharma, mind doesn't change. And so this is why, you know, it keeps coming back to really trying to practice. That doesn't mean we need to be perfect, ideal Buddhists and have some kind of glorified image of how we would be if we were a perfect Buddhist. You know, that's kind of ridiculous. So we probably all have that image, you know, and then of course we never meet up with it. But that's not the point. That's really kind of irrelevant. What we really need to do is whatever we've heard, you know, to try and put it into practice and receive the benefit from it. Because that's only something that helps us, you know, and then by helping us, we can help other people. And then an analogy, the third one, an analogy to taking refuge in the Sangha, to respect the Sangha as our spiritual companions. So here Sangha is referring specifically to the monks and nuns, although the term Sangha in the West sometimes is used in a very general way. You know, when you read it in the text, it refers specifically to the monks and nuns. And, you know, the reason for respecting our ordained beings as our spiritual companions, you know, is not because there's some kind of hierarchical trip, okay, but just because some people have decided to, you know, to devote more time to the practice than we've decided to devote to it, okay. Now, whether any individual monk or nun practices well is a completely different ballgame. You know, when you look at individuals, it's a different thing. But just the Sangha as a general, it's a group of people who decided to devote a lot of time to that. And so by looking at their example, looking at them as spiritual friends, then that helps our practice because, you know, hopefully they've done what we, you know, they're a little bit further along on the path than us. They become like our big brothers and big sisters who can guide us. So paying respect isn't some kind of hierarchical trip, but it's some way of deriving benefit from these people. And then if you're going to broaden it, you know, and you can say Sangha also means just the general Buddhist community. And so, you know, I keep on emphasizing Dharma friendship and meeting together with your Dharma friends and discussing. It's incredibly important. Yeah, and so to really look upon the other lay members of the community as our spiritual companions too, because we're all learning and studying and doing things together. And so to really, respect those people for their efforts in the practice and to learn from them and to be inspired by their example, not compete with them and not get jealous of them and not compare ourselves to them, but just learn from their example and rejoice and be inspired by what they do. And similarly, if somebody's having a hard time, contact them and talk with them. And if somebody doesn't come to teaching for a while, see what's going on, and really reach out and take care of each other. It's funny because we're all saying, I want to slow down, I want to be more compassionate. And yet we fill our lives up with all sorts of stuff so that, one of our Dharma friends is in trouble. We have no time for a 5-minute phone call to see how they are. Yeah? And we just fill our lives up with so much stuff, running. And then we get totally frazzled. I think a big thing in our life is to get our priorities very clear and very straight and live our life according to what's important to us. We don't have to be like everybody else running around from here to there and here to there. There's enough freedom in this country where we can schedule our own lives the way we want it to be. If we fill up our calendar and make our life hectic, you can't blame society. We've made that choice to do it ourselves. There's no big society with a capital S that fills up our appointment book for us and makes us frazzled. We're the ones that get on the phone and make all the appointments and fill everything up and then complain afterwards. So I think really, there's a lot of freedom in the society. It's not a communist state where people make you work, when you don't want to work, we have some control over how much we work. Okay, then you might say, well, if I don't work, I'll get fired. Well, maybe, it's more important to you to have less money and less work and more time. Yeah? I mean, there's enough freedom here where we can, try and arrange things. Maybe not in a perfect way, but we do have some power in it. We don't have to be pushed along by the momentum of the society. Yeah?
Could you say something to parents who feel that they must work outside the home either more hours a day with their children?
Yeah.
And, offer them and help them from the people more.
Yeah. And
something
so.
Something to sustain them.
Right. So parents have to work outside of the home and then come home and have household duties and what to do with your kids. I think again it's something, people, I'm just going to address it very generally here. People have very different needs. And nowadays people, it's like they feel, well, everybody needs to work and everybody needs to work full time because we need more money. We need all this money to support the kids. But then the kids don't get any love because parents aren't around. So then you have to use all the extra money you make to pay for your kids to go to a psychologist. Because your kid has no love and they feel rejected and they're probably at, So I think it's sometimes, to really see, well, what is taking care of a child? Is it giving your time and giving your love, or is it earning $100 million and giving them, yet another sweater and yet another pair of skates and yet another this, that, and the other thing? What's really important to give our kids? And then do our career course, in a similar way. And, when it is very often single, parent households, then parents definitely, the parent definitely needs to work. And so you come home and sometimes you're a bit frazzled and your kid needs some help. I think sometimes it can be helpful to get into a pattern with your child of what you do when you come home. Kind of like, we come home and we sit and we breathe for 5 minutes. And then we do the housework. Yeah? is like kind of pacing ourselves somehow when we get home, instead of just getting home and being in this frazzle to do so much. You know, just to sit down and breathe for 5 minutes. Or even in the case when people have very young children, you know, you get up a little earlier to do your meditation. Or, you know, your child gets used to you meditating and they come and curl up with you when you're meditating. Yeah, little, you know, small children can do that. But to get the kids in that kind of habit also. Yeah? And you know, in terms of household duty, maybe engaging the kids in helping to do that. Yeah? So that doing the household things isn't just something that you do to get it done, but it's something that we all do together, so we spend time together. Yeah? We can spend time together cleaning, and we can play while we clean. Instead of, oh God, I got a vacuum, you know. Will you dust? Because I got a vacuum. You know, it's like, well, we do it together, and we talk, and we, you know, it can be a time for human contact, just doing, you know, household chores. Depends a lot on our attitude. Does that help at all? I mean, I think there's always a choice, but it depends, you know, if you want a certain living standard, maybe there isn't a choice. If you change your living standard or you change the place where you're living, or if you change your attitude towards the work, yeah, it involves a lot more effort, granted, yeah, but when there's a really tough situation, a tough situation has many variable factors in it. And so maybe we can look at it more globally and think, what kind of variables could we change? Instead of, because as soon as we tell ourselves, I have no choice, then we're changing our attitude, except we're making our own attitude worse. Yeah, because as soon as we tell I have no choice and my life's berserky, then we repeat that mantra to ourselves over and over and over again, and we become berserky. Yeah? But if we try and look at the life, you know, okay, I'm going through a difficult time and there's economic problems, so I have to work a lot. Yeah, but I do have choice. I can come home and, you know, I can sit and hold my baby for 5 minutes. There's, you know, there's 5 minutes to hold the baby. Or there's, you know, 10 minutes to talk to the teenager. Or there's 15 minutes to play catch with your third grader. Yeah? Or you engage the kids in things around the home so that you're doing things together. So I think a lot of it depends on our attitude. As soon as we get in a frazzled mental state, you know, you see it's a vicious circle. The environment being berserky makes us berserky, but as soon as we get berserky, we make the environment more berserky. Yeah? So, you know, we can try and break it somehow, starting with ourselves. It takes effort. It takes effort. But it can be done, because if we get into this mentality of it can't be done, then, well, if it can't be done, why are you complaining? You know? Okay? Okay, and then the fourth guideline here was to train in accordance with the good example that the Sangha set. Okay, so when we see people, you know, be the ordained monks and nuns, or be they other Dharma practitioners, whoever it is we see, when we see them doing something great, you know, see them as an example and rejoice in it. Yeah. Now, this is difficult for us in our culture because we've grown up to compete with other people so that when they do well, we feel lousy, you know. And what this is a call to do is completely change our attitude so that when other people do something well, we feel really inspired and rejoice, and we try and act like that too. Instead of getting into the mentality of feeling miserable because somebody else does something well, and then trying to trip them up so that they fall flat on their face next time. Yeah. And again, it's completely coming from the mind, isn't it? Yeah. Somebody does something well. We can either be jealous or we can rejoice. It doesn't depend on the external situation. It depends totally on our own mental state. But as soon as we get jealous or we compete with other people, then look what we do to our environment and look what we do to our relationships with those people and look what we do to our own mind. Because as soon as we start comparing ourselves with people and competing, we're never satisfied with what we do. You know, there's no satisfaction in our own mind. Whereas when people do something well, or people have some good fortune, you know, be it in a worldly way, or in this context we're talking about in a Dharma way, then to rejoice at it and feel happy and see that person as a good example for us. Yeah? Then we're happier, they're happier, the world's better, because everybody's trying to improve themselves. Totally depends on the mind. Now, our habit of competing and comparing might be a quite ingrown one. We have to work on that. But again, this is why at the end of the day, we stop and we review what we did during the day and we think about it, because then we can start to notice when we do that and start to counteract it. Okay, the next one is to avoid being rough and arrogant, running after any desirable object we see and criticizing anything that meets with our disapproval. Gulp. Okay. Be friendly and kind to others and be concerned more with correcting our own faults than with pointing out the faults of others. Definitely something to train in, isn't it? Yeah. Any incredible advice here. And again, it's a call, you know, this mind that likes to be arrogant, that likes to compare ourselves, that likes to put down other people because we feel if we put them down, then we must be good. How does that make us be good by putting somebody else down? Yeah. So that mind's really something to be abandoned. And then similarly, you know, the graspy, greedy mind that wants to get its fingers in every desirable object possible. Because that's the mind that makes us slightly, you know, bananas. Because we're running after one thing after another thing after another thing. So this is saying we don't need to do that. Our whole society may do it, but we don't need to. Yeah, we don't need to run after every desirable thing. We don't need to be the best dressed person. We don't need to eat the most fantastic food. We don't need to always be best in the office. We don't need to always, you know, tell everybody how wonderful and glorious we are. Everybody else might be trying to do that, or a great number of people in society may do that, but we don't have to do that. Yeah? So this is, I mean, Buddha's really challenging us. It's amazing in this land where everybody is so individualistic, there's an incredible, you know, emphasis on conforming. Yeah. We don't have to be as individualistic. We don't have to conform either. We can choose how we want to be. Yeah. Nobody else runs our mind. Then the sixth one is as much as possible to avoid the 10 destructive actions and then to take precepts and to keep them as much as we can. So this is just basic how to get along well in society. Yeah, abandon destructive actions. We're going to get along a lot better with other people if we don't criticize and gossip and lie and things like that. And then in addition, you know, to really increase our practice of ethics, to take precepts, either taking summer all of the five lay precepts or doing like the Mahayana precepts that we do for 24 hours. Incredible practice of mindfulness, very good for the mind. So that's a real way to, you know, act our refuge and really, you know, start putting the feet on the path. Seventh one is to have a compassionate and sympathetic heart towards all sentient beings. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So that's the whole essence of all of the Dharma, that compassionate, sympathetic heart, and to develop that at whenever we can, sitting in traffic or wherever we go. I forget who it was, but somebody recently, you know, they drive quite a bit to work, you know, and they're listening tapes, Dharma tapes in the car, and they're doing mantra, and they're reflecting on the teachings, and they really use the time in the car very wisely. Yeah? And I thought, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yeah? Really use riding in the car.